From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. Thousands of Massachusetts families are on wait lists to get their young children into daycare, and that's preventing many parents from going back to work. GBH Radio's Craig LaMolt has been looking into this and joins us now to talk about the state's daycare crisis. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Arun.
So how many families are we talking about that are waiting for a spot now to open up to get their kids into daycare?
You know, it's hard to say a total. What we know is that about a quarter of children in daycare in Massachusetts receive a state subsidy to pay for it. And currently, there's a waiting list for those subsidy vouchers of 15,000 children. This is not a new problem. There were huge wait lists for daycare subsidies before the pandemic, too. But, you know, right now, as many parents are trying to get back to work, it's really shining a light on this problem recently. I talked to some parents who are on that list, and they told me just how important it is for them and their families to get their kids into daycare so they can start working and support their families again. We don't know for sure how many families that don't qualify for the subsidies are trying to find a spot for their kids. It's really decentralized and privatized system for daycares in the state, and they don't track that. But the challenges that daycares in the state are facing are affecting those daycares too.
And you said that even before the pandemic, it wasn't like it was easy to find daycare. Why are we in this situation? Why aren't there enough daycare spots?
You know, there's just not enough employees to take care of all the kids that need daycare. And that really comes down to how much daycare workers are paid. I talked with Laura Peril about this. She's the president and CEO of an organization called Nurturee, which used to run five state-subsidized daycares in and around Boston. And she said they just couldn't find enough staff for all of their classrooms.
We aggressively attempt to hire. We have signing bonuses. There just aren't people out there who are willing to enter into the childcare field, primarily due to the low wages and challenging work. So what we decided was that the best way to meet our mission was to reduce our footprint to fewer locations.
Nurturee consolidated its staff into four locations in September. And they're not alone. The State Department of Early Education and Care says since March of 2020, there's been an overall loss of more than 6,000 daycare seats in the state. That represents about 2.5% of the state's overall capacity. In addition to closing location, Nurturee also took a bit of a gamble. They gave their employees a bonus and a raise of $1 an hour using funding they got from federal grants. And that's despite the fact that there's no guarantee they're going to get any more financial support like that. Even with that increase in pay, though, Nurturee recently had an applicant, they said, turn down a job offer because she could make more money handling luggage at Logan Airport. So Peril told me this really isn't just a staffing crisis. She said this is a wage crisis.
Well, give us a sense of that. How much are daycare workers making typically?
The average daycare teacher in Massachusetts makes $19.44 an hour, according to the State Department of Early Education and Care. And most assistants make no more than $16 an hour. Peril told me people who are interested in teaching kids would rather work at a public school where they can make 40% more. And unlike daycares, public school teachers don't work in the summer. I talked with William Eddy of the Massachusetts Association of Early Education and Care about the low pay for people in this industry. And he said it's not a new problem.
Early educators in this Commonwealth, over 30% of them are on some form of public assistance. There's something wrong with that.
And even though the daycare workers are paid so little, daycare is still very expensive, right?
Absolutely. It really is. And this is not just a challenge for the state's lowest income people, again, many of whom would qualify for subsidies if they can get off that waiting list. You know, I talked with State Representative Alice Peisch about this. She co-chairs a special legislative commission that's focused on this daycare crisis.
There's also, I think, a large group that doesn't qualify for the subsidy, but for whom the market rates are just beyond their reach.
You know, a single parent with one child who makes $45,000 a year doesn't qualify for a state subsidy, but would have a really hard time paying the nearly $21,000 a year it costs on average to have an infant in daycare in Massachusetts. That's according to the Economic Policy Institute, which is a think tank.
Craig, has any federal pandemic grant money helped daycare stay open over the last year or so?
Yeah, that federal money's definitely helped stabilize things for a lot of daycares. And as I said, Nurturee took a gamble raising their hourly wage. But most daycares aren't going to do that and really can't sustain ongoing pay raises with one-time funding. And they say, you know, bringing the salary up is really the only way they're going to attract more people into the field.
Great reporting, Craig. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's GBH reporter Craig LaMolt. That's GBH's Craig LaMolt. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu is forming a new COVID-19 advisory committee to work towards ending the pandemic in Boston. The 18-member panel includes community and business leaders throughout the city, as well as public health professionals. Mayor Michelle Wu says the goal of the committee is to provide recommendations related to the ongoing challenges of the pandemic and to help the city prepare for future surges.
Omicron, unfortunately, will not be the last variant that we see, and our responsibility in city government now is to look at the data and ensure that we are following the best available recommendations from our community members in taking swift action.
Wu is also asking the group to look at the longer-term impacts of the pandemic, including possible public infrastructure investments. In other news, Harvard and its graduate student union have agreed to a new contract that adds caste to the school's non-discrimination and anti-harassment policy. The contract says student workers will be able to file complaints about unfair treatment based on caste, not just traditional grounds like race and sex. Researcher Suraj Yendi says that new clause is part of a growing effort to stop bias imported from India, a movement that started at Brandeis in Waltham and has spread to other campuses, from UC Davis to Colby College in Maine and now to Harvard.
The concept of caste that has been impeding the progress of Indian society that has now migrated to the United States needs to be abolished. That abolition also begins with the education where pedagogy is taught.
Yendi says campuses are just some of the places where activists would like to see caste discrimination banned. Staying in Cambridge, the city has made headlines in recent days for reportedly looking to hire a so-called rat czar to deal with rising rodent complaints. But that's not completely true. The idea of a rat response liaison grew from a Cambridge City Council vote to create a coordinator for the city's anti-rodent efforts. But for about 2 years now, Dan Ravello in the city manager's office says he's been doing just that. And while he's not the fabled rat czar from the headlines, it's a bit early to say a new position has been created.
What it could become in the future, you know, we don't know yet. The city manager has said that if he looks at it further and he thinks he needs to create a dedicated position to this, he will do that and he will fund it. But we're not there yet.
Ravello says the city has received over 700 rodent complaints this year and last, but that increase is not unique to Cambridge. And finally, today marks the 80th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, being remembered in a ceremony this morning at the Charlestown Navy Yard. Chief Petty Officer Elliot Fabrizio says the event includes a wreath-laying ceremony aboard the USS Cassin Young. That ship was in the Pacific during the attack.
She fought during several of the battles out there and actually survived two kamikaze attacks. Many sailors we honor and recognize made the ultimate sacrifice serving on that ship.
There will also be a single cannon shot fired from the USS Constitution to mark the day. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo in news, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Before you go, let me tell you about Nova Now, a new biweekly podcast from the PBS science series Nova. Join host Alok Patel as he explores the science behind the biggest headlines of the day. Now is more critical than ever to distinguish fact from fiction and find science-based answers to the most pressing questions of our time. Subscribe to Nova Now wherever you get your podcasts.